TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Man, I've had a rough couple of days. I bit my tongue yesterday, and I don't mean I just kind of bit my tongue. I mean and I'm not talking about metaphorically bit my tongue. I literally bit my tongue yesterday, and it hurts so bad. And some people are saying that I sound a little bit like Mike Tyson this morning.
I think that's ludicrous. I don't even know why I would even... Why would you even want to sound like Mike Tyson? That's ridiculous.
And then yesterday, my glasses broke. I'd had these reading glasses for about 3 years. They finally broke yesterday. And then yesterday, I was coming into work and my left hip was killing me. I mean, it was just fierce pain yesterday. And I've been reading... I don't know if you follow Neil Bortz on Twitter, but Neil just had a hip replacement. And he's been, you know, of course, tweeting out about that and his recovery from that and all of that. And I was thinking, the whole time coming into work yesterday, I was thinking, man, I hope I don't need a hip replacement. That's the last thing I need is a hip replacement. I don't want that. So I got to work, and it hurt so bad that I took my wallet out, and I laid it on the desk. Guess what stopped hurting? My hip. And then I'm looking at my wallet, and the thing's an inch thick. And I've got business cards, and I've got receipts in there, and I've got credit cards, and, you know, debit card, and press credentials, and I had my AAA card in there. So I took all of that out, and I got it down to about, I don't know, I guess about a half an inch thick now. Pain went away. Sometimes those wallets are, and it makes me think of that Seinfeld episode with George and Jerry while they were sitting in the diner there, and George pulls out his wallet. It's like 6 inches thick, and he tries to put one more thing in, and the whole thing explodes. So that's kind of what my wallet was like. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. I also filled out a bracket yesterday for the tournament, and then upon reviewing my bracket, I immediately tore it up and threw it in the trash. I know nothing about basketball whatsoever. So, but we'll give you some updates about how that, because I think that really starts in earnest today, doesn't it? The March Madness, as they call it. So we'll give an update on that this morning and let you know what's going on with that. All right, the travel ban by Donald Trump. This is the second one by President Trump that's been struck down. He spoke about it last night at an appearance in Nashville. And he said that this judge striking down the travel ban made our country look weak. I think it goes beyond that. I think it not only makes our country look weak, it makes our country actually weak. I don't understand. Now, this judge, well, actually, it was the attorney general for Hawaii. He said that you definitely want to protect this country, right? You got to protect this country. But you can't protect this country by prohibiting people of certain religions and national origin. Well, first of all, it has nothing to do with religion. Nothing. The only thing it has to do with are these formerly seven, now six countries that we can't properly vet the people coming in. And it's only, what, a 60-day moratorium? It's either 60 or 90. It's a 60 to 90-day moratorium on people coming in from these countries so that we can properly know who exactly is coming in. So this attorney general says, well, you can't do it because of religion or nation of origin. Then what then, sir? What then would a travel ban, what would justify a travel ban? What other criteria would you use? If you've got nations out there that are hotbeds of terrorism, why not take a little time and say, hey, these folks in this country, We got to kind of sit back and take another look at them coming into this nation.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
The danger is clear. The law is clear. The need for my executive order is clear.
It's clear. It is absolutely clear. There is nothing, nothing, zero, 0.0000% chance that Donald Trump's travel ban is unconstitutional. There is nothing, nothing unconstitutional about it. Why? Because the Constitution says, the law says that the president can impose a travel ban on any people that he desires, on any people that he deems necessary. Yet this judge in Hawaii is striking down this travel ban. This, they got to fight this thing. They got to do it. They got to take it to the Supreme Court. That's why we got to get Gorsuch confirmed and put on the Supreme Court as soon as possible. Now, told you yesterday that the crown prince of Saudi Arabia met with the president at the White House. Now, he didn't bow to him. He didn't curtsy to him. President Trump simply shook his hand, which seemed to be completely acceptable with the folks from Saudi Arabia. They seemed to be A-okay with it. Well, the president did a little something that maybe not a lot of people noticed. They all sat down for lunch. And the president was kind of sitting in the middle of the table. It's a very long, like a dining room table thing. Very pretty. Gosh, I couldn't even imagine how much that cost. So anyway, he's sitting in the middle on the left-hand side. The crown princes are sitting right across from the president. But in something that I don't think was an accident, I don't think this was an accident. The president placed Diana Powell, at the head of the table. Now, this is a woman. She's an Arab-speaking top Trump aide. She sat at the head of the table at this meeting with Saudi Arabia, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. Now, where are all the people saying this is an, you know, of course, the liberals are going to completely ignore this. They're not going to say that it was symbolic. I think it was highly symbolic. So there they are. They're in there. We've got, looks like Jared Kushner. We got Rince Priebus. We got Steve Bannon. There's the president. The crown princes are there. And there's Diana Powell right at the head of the table. Now, this is the great misogynist, Donald Trump. This is the great woman hater, Donald Trump, right? That's him who sits one of his top aides at the head of the table. I think it's very symbolic by the president to do something like that. All right, coming up this morning, I've got tickets to give away to go see Earth, Wind, and Fire. You don't want to miss out on that. That's going to be a fantastic show, and I'm going to be doing that, we'll say, within the next half hour.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 9:42, 18 minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Let's go to the phones right now and talk with Skylar Croft from the Post and Courier. Good morning, Skylar. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing good. Now, this story in the Post and Courier this morning by Andy Shane, tell us a little bit about this corruption probe that is going on up in Colombia.
Well, that's been going on for a couple of years now, and it's an investigation of a special prosecutor looking at the corrupt charges against members of the legislature. It led to the charges and eventual resignation of Bobby Harrell, and then just a few months ago, it named another lawmaker from Charleston, Jim Merrill. This was an audit based on the audit that we obtained that goes back and looks at the Republican Party from its spending up to 2000-ish. And mm-hmm. that's significant because what it shows is that it was at the time that now Governor Henry McMaster was the head of the Republican Party. There was just no money left in the account. It had just gone down to even negative.
Right.
And he was running for re-election at the time of the state GOP, and there were some grumbles and some whispers saying, you know, well, he just has not paid attention to the finances. And what the audit showed, and this was done after the fact, that there were sources that came in and put a bunch of money into those accounts during the time that Henry McMaster was running for re-election.
Right. And now, we're talking about Richard Quinn and his son, Rick Quinn.
Right.
Basically came in and they bolstered up the coffers of the Republican Party in South Carolina.
And so they put money in different installments over a couple days in May of 1990. And then they sent a letter saying, hey, everything's fine. Support Henry. The accounts now shot up to $100,000, but they didn't disclose. You know, they were the donors. They just said,
right.
there's lots of money in there. And once that Henry was reelected, the money went back to him. So it gave this buildup that the finances are fine, and then the money went back to them as well, too. And, it doesn't, there's no one saying this is illegal,
right.
But it is being pulled into the investigation because Rick Quinn is one of the state lawmakers that's being looked at as part of this probe.
Okay. So, but again, right now, nobody's saying that anything illegal was done, but maybe looking at how ethical it was?
Yeah, ethical or patterns or, was it something that was repeated?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing as well, too. So, it's a corruption investigation. It's looking at conduct. It's looking at money. It's looking at those sort of things, too. So, it also shows that SLED is willing to go back and look that far.
Yeah, we're talking about 17 years.
Yeah, where the roots of all this is.
So, I mean, is David Pascoe, has he said anything about it? He issued a comment about it yet?
No, he's been totally mum on everything. So, the grand jury is still meeting, looking at this. Your records don't change. So, there's really no need for speed on this. It's not like there's a constitutional crisis either. So that's been slow and playing out.
Any idea of what the outcome could be, what they're actually trying to, I don't know, establish or what's the end game on this?
Well, I think what it is, there's one thing you're looking at is that the conduct that became the norm in Colombia, that's what happened with Representative Merrill is his argument is this was above board and normal conduct and that he did nothing wrong. But, in the eyes of the prosecutor, that's not the case. So that's just, the case that the money was being spread out or influence or who was doing what.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see. We'll certainly keep up with this story. All right, Skyler, we appreciate you being on the program this morning.
All right,
we'll talk to you next week. I've reached out to Andy Shane to see if we can get him on the show this morning to delve a little bit into this. So let's break this down. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and I'll try to break this down a little bit more for you about this investigation or this story that has come out about Henry McMaster and several others up in Columbia. We'll have that next.
Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 5 minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. We are getting breaking news this morning. There are reports of an explosion at the International Monetary Fund headquarters in Paris. Apparently, one person was injured after opening an exploding envelope. This, according to local reports, counterterrorism police have locked down parts of the city. We'll give you more on that coming up and find out how that will affect things today. Yesterday, Janet Yellen, it looks like the Fed is going to raise the interest rates once again. This portion of the program brought to you by Mountain Laurel Investment Group. Let's go out and talk to Adam Curran. Good morning, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing good, Charlie. Yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. How does the stock market react to the interest rates by the Feds going up?
It's funny, you know, sometimes the market, you just have to be a contrarian to understand what the heck's going on with the market. It applauded that. The Fed is anticipated to increase interest rates 3 more times this year.
Wow.
And then 3 times next year. So interest rates are going up. It's funny how quickly the narrative changes, where a year ago, everyone is saying, you're printing all this money, it's going to result in inflation, you guys better be careful. Now, all of a sudden, they're saying, we might have some inflation if we don't get ahead of this thing. So they're getting ahead of the curve, as it's called in economics, where they're going to be raising interest rates. So all you listening right now who have adjustable rate mortgages, are riddled with credit card debt, are living like the Smiths to keep up with the Joneses, the music is about to stop. So you better find a chair to sit in, because as interest rates go up, it's going to be a heck of a lot less advantageous to be leveraged like a lot of people are right now.
Right. Now, you've got a show coming up this weekend, and you're going to be talking about how to go broke in retirement. And not having a good financial plan is a great way to go broke.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to teach everyone how they could go broke in retirement. That should be really enlightening to people. A lot of people are going, well, I already done that, Adam. I don't need to listen to this week's show. Please don't listen to it then if you've already gone broke. Good job. But no, there's a number of risks out there for individuals that that they need to be conscious of, and having a good plan puts a lot of them to rest. People, it's this balancing act when you're in retirement. You're a tightrope walker. You can't take too much risk. You can't be too conservative. You got to worry about future health care costs. You got to worry about longer life expectancies. You can't just dole out money to your 40-year-old child who lives in your basement infinitely. All of these things will get covered. And sometimes I feel like I'm part psychologist, part financial person, because most of the decisions that we make with our money are really psychological. They're based on something we saw earlier in our life or a life experience. And most personal financial decisions are really only 20% dollars and cents, and most of them are psychological. So a lot of the things that we cover dive into why people look at their money in the way that they do, and why they make decisions that they do. And a good financial plan separates you from your fear and your greed, and that's how you make good financial decisions. Separate yourself from your emotions.
Yeah, basically put your ego in a bucket and go ahead and use common sense. Well, it's going to be a fascinating show this week. Adam, we appreciate you being on the program, buddy. We will talk to you next week.
All right, thank you, Charlie.
Thank you very much. Adam Curran with Mountain Laurel Investment Group. And I'll tell you what, I have got something for you right now. I got 2 tickets to see Earth, Wind, and Fire at the North Charleston Performing Arts Center. That is coming up on April the 2nd. You do not want to miss out on this show. I will take caller number 5 right now at 556-1250. That's 556-1250. You're going to win yourself tickets to see Earth, Wind, and Fire at the North Charleston Performing Arts Center. It's going to be so awesome for you. Let's head to the phones right now and say good morning. Who is this? Walt, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Doing great, man. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic on a Thursday. Congratulations, Walt. You just picked yourself up a pair of tickets to see Earth, Wind, and Fire at the North Charleston Performing Arts Center.
Awesome. That's great.
That's going to be a fan. Have you ever seen them before?
I haven't. I've always wanted to, but I'm looking forward to this.
There you go. Well, congratulations, buddy. I'm going to put you on hold and get some information from you. Also this morning, well, coming up tomorrow and, well, tomorrow is Friday. Coming up tomorrow, I got more Earth, Wind, and Fire tickets to give away. And later on this morning, I've got tickets to give away to the North Charleston Pops. They got a great show coming up for you.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 11 minutes past 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA. WTMA.com. Glad to have you along with us on the program. All right. On the Senate floor yesterday afternoon, John McCain basically said that, not even basically, he said, he came out and said that Rand Paul was working for Vladimir Putin. Here's what he said.
So I repeat again, the senator from Kentucky is now working for Vladimir Putin.
Okay.
I yield the floor.
There you go. Good. I think it's about time you yield the floor. So he got mad because Rand Paul voted against a resolution to allow Serbia to break away territory of Montenegro and join the NATO alliance. He said, if there were objections, you're achieving the objectives of Vladimir Putin. If they object, they're now carrying out the desires and ambitions of Vladimir Putin, and I do not say that lightly. Well, Senator Rand Paul objected, but he didn't comment, left the Senate promptly, prompting McCain to say, that's really remarkable, a senator blocking a treaty that is supported by the overwhelming number, perhaps, says 98 or at least of his colleagues would come to the floor and object and walk away. The only conclusion you can draw when he walks away is that he has no arguments. And so now, Rand Paul said on ABC's This Week last month that John McCain has been wrong on just about everything over the last four decades, and that we were very lucky John McCain is not in charge, because I think we would be in perpetual war. So this little rift, this little quarrel that is going on between John McCain and Rand Paul, I don't think that's going to be stopping anytime soon. But let's play devil's advocate. All right? Let's do that for a second. So here's what John McCain said.
So I repeat again, the senator from Kentucky is now working for Vladimir Putin.
Okay, where's the proof? Where's the proof? He voted against the bill. He voted against this treaty. Where's the proof? Just like you're calling for proof that the Obama administration wiretapped Trump Tower. You're calling for proof on that, John McCain. Where's your proof? Where's your proof that Rand Paul is working for Vladimir Putin? I would love to see the proof of that. I would love to see that. Even though the New York Times themselves said that the Michael Flynn conversation with the Russians was captured, they had that transcript of that conversation because of a wiretap on Trump Tower. Even though the New York Times themselves said that. Now they said that, and then they come back and they say, well, we want proof of a wiretap, but why don't you look at your own news? Do you not read your own newspaper? Is that what's going on? So, I don't know. I think it's time for McCain to go. It's time for McCain and Lindsey Graham. Here's what they need to do. They need to go, they need to leave, and they need to go form their own consulting company or their own whatever company they want to form. And just, you guys live your lives happily ever after. Because these people are not in step with the average conservative. They are not in step. For eight years, do you remember any of these people, John McCain or Lindsey Graham, standing up to Barack Obama? No, not at all. Do you remember them voting against any of Barack Obama's appointees? No, not at all. Do you remember them standing up and holding their ground for conservative values over the past 8 years? No, not at all. They need to go away and be, I don't know what, maybe a comedy team. Oh, I'm sorry, they already have Dumb and Dumber.
WTMA. 1250 WTMA. It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
It's 8:22, 22 minutes past 8 o'clock on the Big Talker. 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. So let's imagine, let's go back, let's jump in the Wayback Machine and go back, I don't know, let's just say a year, 1 year. We'll call it March 16th, 2016. We're in the last year of the Obama administration. All right. We're in the Wayback Machine. So, could you imagine a picture of Barack Obama in the lobby of the Veterans Administration. Could you see that? I mean, yeah, he's president of the United States. That's completely acceptable. Could you imagine a picture of the Secretary of Veteran Affairs, his picture, being alongside the president's picture in the lobby of the Veterans Administration? Could you imagine that? Yes, of course you could. That's completely acceptable. So now let's step out of the Wayback Machine and come back to March 16th, 2017, when it is completely unacceptable for the picture of the president and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, it is unacceptable for their picture to be hanging in a VA hospital in Florida, West Palm Beach. There are two empty picture frames in the lobby of West Palm Beach's VA hospital, and that got a group of local veterans fired up, so they turned to their congressman for help. Photographs of the president, Donald J. Trump, and just the Secretary of Veteran Affairs should hang at the entrance to the hospital, but they don't. So Congressman Brian Mast, himself a veteran, brought the men and the portraits to the facility and demanded that they be installed. There's a couple of local veterans. He took them took the pictures, demanded that these pictures be installed in the lobby of the VA hospital in West Palm Beach. So, Mast office says he was contacted by several of his constituents who were veterans, and they wanted to know why President Trump's portrait and Secretary David Shulkin's portrait were not in the lobby to greet visitors at the VA hospital. In this video, they've got the video, you can see Congressman Mast carrying the portraits and watching as workers put them up. And the another veteran was there, Bo Brumfield, he was there too. And Mast said, proud of the fact that local vet community got it done. We walked in there, we made it happen. It was non-confrontational, it was non-political. We just wanted to see it happen. I'm sorry, that was from veteran David Brumfield. Now, Brumfield served in the Army's infantry, seen combat, and he said that not hanging the photographs was disrespectful. He said it's been 60-something days now. The VA's been asked about it a few times. The local VA hospital has, and they haven't had any real reason other than they don't have the picture, which is readily available. So, Congressman Mast showed up at the West Palm Beach VA, where he gets his own health care, by the way, him himself a veteran, and they hung the picture in the VA hospital in West Palm Beach. So, what happened as soon as Mast and these veterans left the VA hospital after the pictures were hung up? They took them right back down. The VA hospital, the Veterans Administration took them down. And that to me is unbelievable. That is, and when we talk about this silent coup that's going on right now in this country against the President of the United States and this administration, this is what I'm talking about. That these people will be, they will put their politics ahead of decorum. They will put politics ahead of protocol. So I have this question. If they're willing to do this, if they're willing to take down pictures of the president and the Secretary of Veteran Affairs, what else are they willing to do? How far will they go to make their political points known? It's unbelievable. If they'll take down pictures, the people at the VA, what else will they do? How far will they take their political agenda to prove their point? I think it's disgraceful. I think the head of the VA hospital in West Palm Beach should be relieved of duty, should lose their job. It's just, it's like going through the White House and taking down the picture of the President of the United States. I'm sorry. I don't care about your politics. That is a taxpayer-owned hospital. The American people paid for that hospital. The American people elected Donald Trump as president, and you need to respect that no matter what your politics are. It's unbelievable, John.
After all, Hillary Clinton's picture still hangs in the White House with all the other first ladies.
Yeah, exactly. So let's take that one down. Let's take that picture down. Oh, the outcry there would be if that were to happen. Oh, yeah. Well, of course, it would be racist if you took down the picture of Barack Obama, wouldn't it? Oh, yeah. You know it would be. All right. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Let's go downtown and talk to Lee and see what he has to say. Lee, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people feel uncomfortable about Donald Trump, and I feel a little uncomfortable about him, is because I keep seeing so much information about this Russia connection. If he would just release his tax return.
Wait. What information are you seeing about a Russian connection?
Okay. He got some money from, he got $60 million from this Russian oligarch for a property in Florida.
Yeah.
That, I mean,
which he admitted to on the David Letterman show. He admitted to that on the David Letterman show. Basically, he sold a house to a Russian and made a $60 million profit. So what's wrong with that?
There's something a little fishy about
that. Is it fishy back in 2005? Back in 2005 when that happened? Was it fishy then? Because the Russians knew in 2005 that he was going to be president of the United States in 2017, right? They knew that. They were just that good, weren't they? No. Not holding water in these BS talking points of the oligarchy. When's the last time? Let me ask you, Lee. When's the last time you used the word oligarchy? When's the last time you used that word? Is that something that's normally in your vocabulary that you run around saying, you know, the Russian, you know, I was over at McDonald's the other day and I was talking to the lady behind the counter and I said, can I have a Big Mac? And oh, did you hear about the Russian oligarchy? You've never used that word before in your life. Until the Democratic Party told you to use it. And now these people are spitting it out like, oh my gosh, like so much pablum.
WTMA, the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 8:42, 18 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Let's go to Lou in Mount Pleasant. Lou, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I just would like to tell you that I've been looking for the president and the secretary's picture at the Ralph Johnson.
Right.
And it hasn't appeared yet.
Aren't they doing some construction in the lobby there, though?
Yeah, but that wall's completed.
Yeah.
It would be an interesting thing for you or your television associate to take a picture of the blank wall.
We will certainly do that. I appreciate it, Lou. We'll find out exactly what's going on with that. I mean, I would have thought, I mean, my gosh, you're going to just about any government office, especially any federal office, and you're certainly going to find the picture of the president and the secretary of whatever division that might be. You'll find their pictures there, usually. Now, maybe that's all changed since, I don't know, January the 20th, 2017, but as far as I've always known, they've got the picture of the president right there. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Lots of talk has been made about this land deal that Donald Trump had with this Russian down in Palm Beach. The oligarch. It's an oligarch. I love people using that word. Last week, they didn't even know what it meant. So this Russian businessman, he's a Russian fertilizer mogul named Dmitry Ryabalev. He bought this home from Donald Trump for about $95 million. Now, Donald Trump bought it back in 2004 for $41.4 million. Now, that was 2004. And he got that from nursing home tycoon Abe Gozman. Now, imagine that. There is such a thing in this country as a nursing home tycoon. Oh, and hopefully I'll remember. There's a great story about nursing homes, about a lady. I'll tell you about that coming up. Remind me. So he bought this home from the nursing home tycoon Abe Gozman in 2004 for $41.4 million. Spent 2 years renovating it. and then put it back on the market. Sold it for $95 million. Now, the reason that it went for so much money is because of all the upgrades that Donald Trump did to this thing. We're talking about marble floors, bulletproof windows. I mean, he just went all out on this property.
So you're saying he flipped that house?
He did. He flipped that house. That's exactly what he did. And he doubled his money. I don't see why everybody is so. Does Donald Trump have an association with the nursing home industry because he bought it from Abe Gosman? Huh? Is that it? It's big nursing homes. That's who Donald Trump is in league with. So he sold it to this Russian fertilizer guy for $95 million, who, and this kind of breaks my heart, he tore the property down. I mean, this beautiful home right there in Palm Beach, tore it down. He was going to cut it up. I don't know if he ever did this or not, but he was going to cut it up in about three different lots. I'm sure the neighbors will be really happy about that. But, you know, guess he was able to do so. So I went online to the Palm Beach County, Florida tax appraiser, and I put in the name Dmitry Robilikilev. Nothing on there. Apparently, I don't know if he owns property down there anymore or not, or if he sold it or what have you. But then I put in, let's just put in Trump. Let's see how much property Donald Trump owns in Palm Beach County, Florida. There we go. Personal property. Donald J. Trump. We will search this. Oh, he owns a property on Woodbridge Road in Palm Beach County. Looks like he bought it back in 2001. It is worth, a whopping $81,861. $81,000. 2014, looks like, 2014, is that when he bought it? Let me just take a look at this thing again. Official sale of date, 2001. Well, back in 2014, it was worth $74,000. It's up to $81,000 now in value. Looks like the ad valorem tax on this property is $1,408. So I swear, all these people that are trying to find something to hang on Donald Trump, they're coming up empty-handed. All right, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Jim Roop, our correspondent, and we're going to be talking about this federal judge who blocked Donald Trump's travel ban. That's Jim Roop from Los Angeles coming up in just a moment.
1250 WTMA.
Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 8:53. 7 minutes until 9 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA. Let's go to the phones. We've got Jim Roop on with us from Los Angeles. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm very well. Good morning.
All right, Jim, federal court for the second time blocked President Trump's travel ban. Tell us a little bit about the reason that they're saying they blocked this.
Well, the Hawaii judge, U.S. District Court Judge Derek Watson, issued a 46-page ruling on this, and pretty quickly, which tells me he had it all in mind in the first place.
Right.
But he ruled, in all of that, he kept invoking Donald Trump's past comments about when he was a candidate enacting a Muslim ban, even his conversation with Rudy Giuliani, asking how he can do it legally. And he wrote that a reasonable, objective observer would view even with a new order as issued with a purpose to disfavor a particular religion, in spite of whatever religiously neutral purpose language is in there.
Right.
So religious discrimination. Also, a Maryland judge ruled pretty much the same thing. We're still waiting on Washington State, but because it's the same judge who slapped the freeze on it in the first place,
mm-hmm.
We expect it'll be another block against Donald Trump's travel ban.
So basically, to me, the judges are speculating as to the purpose of the ban. Instead of reading the letter of the law, I feel like they're going with the spirit, what they perceive as the spirit of the law.
Exactly. But what's interesting is, you know, Donald Trump has been criticizing the Ninth Circuit Court for a while, very liberal court,
mm-hmm.
in the West. And after the Hawaii judge issued his order, five Republican-appointed judges to the Ninth Circuit Court issued a very interesting, unusual, and unsolicited filing, saying that no matter what you think of Donald Trump or the executive order, he was within his powers to issue it.
Right.
Signaling to Donald Trump, hey, man, go ahead and file a challenge. If one of us is sitting on that court, you might prevail.
Yeah.
So it's a very, it was very strange, but quite interesting, because you're right. If you, you have to go by what is written in the order, not what you think he meant. Because if we started doing that, then opinion falls in and justice goes out the window.
Right. I mean, you'd be legislating from the bench. So he also called it unprecedented overreach by the court. I mean, I think a lot of people would agree with that.
Yeah, well, yeah, Donald Trump talked about that last night in his rally in Tennessee, but that's something he's been saying for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since, you know, the Seattle judge with the first ban blocked it, and then the Ninth Circuit Court upheld that block, and Donald Trump then reworded it, thinking that he took into account every concern of the Ninth Circuit Court, because the Ninth Circuit Court's ruling was pretty explicit.
Right.
And so Donald Trump took that, okay, well, let's change the language and let's get it through. Because he is within his rights. He even read the statute that allows him to
right.
do that last night in Tennessee. So you have to go, well, okay. And it's not a forever ban. It's 90 days from those five Muslim-majority countries, 120 days for refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as Donald Trump says, we kind of get our act together here. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when the Justice Department gets the Washington ruling and where they're going to go next.
Anybody speculating why the Trump administration, apparently there was something in the first decision by the court to block this travel ban. There was something in there that they thought may have stood up in court. Is that why they didn't challenge it further?
Well, they didn't want to deal with it. They just said, let's just reword it. Let's take whatever the court said. Let's appeal or appease the court by rewording it and giving them what the language they're looking for, and we should be fine. However, the lower courts, and Donald Trump accused Derek Watson, the U.S. District Court judge in Hawaii, accused him of his being politically motivated, his ruling last night. So it's a head-scratcher for him and for the Justice Department and all those in favor of the ban. So, again, once Washington State issues its ruling, we'll see where it goes from here.
Any truth to the rumor that you can see Hawaii from your house? tell me about this. San Francisco, the robot tax, they're calling the tax robots that replace human workers?
Yeah, well, you know, innovation, technology, it's kind of where it's going here. And that's one of the things, too, that Donald Trump is trying to stop from happening. So we'll see where it goes. But San Francisco, that whole Silicon Valley hotbed of technology is quite a strange issue in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean it's the northern part of the state, so I can excuse us from down.
Right. Yeah. Well, I know you're ways away, but there any more word on this attack on Michael Savage in that restaurant up in San Francisco?
No, not just yet.
Okay.
We're going to find out more about that, of course, as the thing unfolds. But you know, again, that's a dangerous place to be if you're a conservative.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jim, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All righty.
Thank you very much. Jim Roop calling in from Los Angeles. And in case you haven't heard, WTMA talk show host, nationally syndicated talk show host Michael Savage was attacked. Was it Tuesday night, John? I think it was Tuesday night, as he was in a restaurant in just north of San Francisco. He was having dinner there. And some guy started taunting him in the restaurant, followed Michael Savage out, and then a scuffle ensued. Now, I don't really see a 74-year-old man like Michael Savage wanting to get into a scuffle with a younger fella. I think he just wanted to be left alone. I think his dog, his poodle Teddy, got pushed or kicked out of the way or something like that. Teddy was involved in the scrape as well. But from what we're hearing, Michael Savage was left bloodied and shaken after the altercation. So I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about this coming up.